Did Jesus as Master Teacher always follow the rules? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson from the Walla Walla University School of Theology, your host for this series of studies on education. We wanted to be back to three discussion partners, but we discovered that what is acceptable for Zoom is not good broadcast quality. So today's lesson will be a monologue on the topic, More Lessons from the Master Teacher. In this lesson, we want to look at the creative, even unorthodox methods used by Jesus, the Master Teacher. But first, I want to read a striking education quote from Adventism's charismatic co-founder, Ellen White. It's from her very first Council on Education in 1872, Volume 3 of her Testimonies to the Church, page 133. God never designed that one human mind should be under the complete control of another. And those who make efforts to have the individuality of their pupils merged in themselves, and to be mind, will, and conscience for them, assume fearful responsibilities. These scholars may, upon certain occasions, appear like well-drilled soldiers. But when the restraint is removed, there will be seen a want of independent action from firm principle existing in them. Those who make it their object to so educate their pupils that they may see and feel that the power lies in themselves to make men and women of firm principle, qualified for any position in life, are the most useful and permanently successful teachers. Their work may not show to the very best advantage to careless observers, and their labors may not be valued as highly as are those of the teacher, who holds the minds and wills of his scholars by absolute authority. But the future lives of the pupils will show the fruits of the better plan of education. What we discover in the Gospels is that Jesus was a master teacher who specialized in creative and unorthodox methods. We could even call him the teacher of unexpected surprises. Let's explore what that means in the light of some intriguing examples from the Gospels. These are the four crucial questions or themes that we will explore. The content of what he said, falling under two headings. A, people are more important than specific laws, even God-given laws. B, equality of ethnic groups, of the sexes, in economic status. Secondly, how he said it. Here we see a blend of statements, commands, and stories. Three, how he modeled what he said. Four, and another how, did he do it quietly or publicly? And in all his public ministry, Jesus constantly faced three crucial choices. Should he challenge or confront the prevailing culture? Should he focus on the positive by affirming the good things in the culture instead of attacking evils? Should he strengthen the commitment to moral law while loosening the grip of specific cultural laws? We'll see that he did some of all three. But now for some examples. One, he touched me. The healed leper. In our day, touching leper may not be good hygiene, but in Jesus' day, the prohibition was much more serious. Luke 5. Once when he was in the cities, there was a man covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he bowed with his face to the ground and begged him, Lord, if you choose, you can make me clean. Then Jesus stretched out his hand, touched him, and said, I do choose. Be made clean. Immediately the leprosy left him. In short, Jesus was unafraid of contamination. In broad daylight, he healed the leper. He could, of course, have healed him from a distance. He could have just spoken a word. But Jesus touched him. The memory of that touch may have been more powerful to the healed man than the healing itself. Two, healing a wild and possessed foreigner. One day Jesus took his disciples into unclean territory. The Decapolis, the Ten Cities, was a district on the east side of the Sea of Galilee. This was not Jewish country. Jesus went there to heal a demon-possessed wild man. When he sent the demons into a herd of swine, the people of the area were so alarmed that they begged Jesus to leave them. The healed man begged to go with Jesus, but Jesus said to him, No. Mark 5. As he was getting into the boat, a man who had been possessed by demons begged him that he might be with them, but Jesus refused and said to him, Go home to your friends. tell them how much the Lord has done for you and what mercy he has shown you. And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed. Jesus will return to Decapolis and will glimpse the effect of the healed man's witness. 3. Ignoring, but then healing a persistent woman's demon-possessed daughter. Before returning to the Decapolis, Jesus visits another foreign country, Tyre and Sidon. The story is recorded in Matthew 15 and Mark 7. Blending the two accounts yields this story. Jesus took his disciples to Tyre and Sidon for some R&R, but didn't tell anyone else that he was going. Somehow, a Canaanite woman with a demon-possessed daughter discovered that he was there, but had to overcome no less than 5 hurdles before she received her heart's desire. Normally we think of gentle Jesus eager to help, but here are the 5 hurdles that make him seem so distant. First, she had to overcome Jesus' secrecy. Second, she had to overcome Jesus' silence. Third, she had to overcome the disciples' hostility. Send her away, they urged Jesus. Fourth, she had to overcome Jesus' seemingly cool attitude. I'm only sent to the lost sheep of Israel, he said. Fifth and finally, she had to get past Jesus' off-putting statement about not giving the children's food to the dogs. But even the dogs get the crumbs from the master's table, the woman urged. With that, Jesus threw open the windows of heaven. O woman, great is your faith, he said, and her daughter was healed. What a teaching moment for Jesus as he nudged his male disciples towards a more receptive attitude towards foreigners and women. He started out so brusque and distant, but in the end, his intention became clear. Coming back from the territory of Tyre and Sidon and his remarkable treatment of the Syrophoenician woman, Jesus detoured to the Decapolis where Jesus had commanded the healed demoniac to go home and tell what Jesus had done for him. Mark 8 tells how a great crowd gathered to hear Jesus, some 4,000 men plus women and children. As told in Mark 6, Jesus had already fed more than 5,000 Jewish men. Here he feeds more than 4,000 Greeks who came from the Decapolis, the fruit of the man's witness. The man had desperately wanted to go with Jesus, but Jesus refused his request, instead sending him back home to be a witness. It worked. The people responded by the thousands. On balance, as we ponder the wide variety of ways that Jesus worked with people, it nearly defies description. He could be gentle, but he could also be firm, almost to the point of rudeness. As I was preparing for this edition of the Good Word, I tracked down this little sign that I remembered seeing near the trail on top of Mount Howard in the Wallowa Blue Mountains in Oregon. Originally coming from a cable car entry in the little village of Châteaudun in Switzerland, it carried the same message in 3 languages. In English, it said, "Please do not pick the flowers." In German, it said, "It is forbidden to pick the flowers." In French, it said, "Those who love the mountains, leave them their flowers." My first impulse was to put the German version at the bottom of the preferred list. But then I realized that a German might not see it that way at all. Similarly, in the methods and message of Jesus, he could be both tough and gentle, illustrating a truth that the Apostle Paul put into words, "I have become all things to all people, that I might be all by all means save some," 1 Corinthians 9:22. We could look at a host of other examples, all illustrating different aspects of Jesus' ministry. 2 stories in particular emphasize Jesus' outreach to non-Jews, the story of the Samaritan woman at Jacob's well in John 4, and the story in Luke 10 of the Good Samaritan, who helped the wounded man on the road to Jericho. But we must mention the 3 stories of the lost found in Luke 15, the stories of the lost coin, the lost sheep, and the lost boy. The story of the widow's lost coin illustrates the experience of those who don't even know they are lost. Could that possibly apply to the secularists in our day? The story of the lost sheep, on the other hand, represents those who know they are lost, but who need help getting home. Finally, the story of the lost boy represents the repentant rebels, who know the way home and simply need to put one foot ahead of the other until they get there. Jesus reached out to all of those. Indeed, we can surmise that Jesus also had a warm spot in his heart for the angry elder brother, who was incensed that the father had thrown a party for his renegade younger brother. The story of the two brothers is worth reading in a modern translation. Here it is in The Message by Eugene Peterson. Luke 15. There was once a man who had two sons. The younger said to his father, "Father, I want right now what's coming to me." So the father divided the property between them. It wasn't long before the younger son packed his bags and left for a distant country. There, undisciplined and dissipated, he wasted everything he had. After he'd gone through all his money, there was a bad famine all through that country, and he began to hurt. He signed on with a citizen there who assigned him to his fields to slop the pigs. He was so hungry he would have eaten the corn cobs in the pig slop, but no one would give him any. That brought him to his senses. He said, "All those farmhands working for my father sit down to 3 meals a day, and here I am starving to death. I'm going back to my father. I'll say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against God. I've sinned before you. I don't deserve to be called your son. Take me on as a hired hand.'" He got right up and went home to his father. When he was still a long way off, his father saw him. His heart pounding, he ran out, embraced him, and kissed him. The son started his speech, "Father, I've sinned against God. I've sinned before you. I don't deserve to be called your son ever again." But the father wasn't listening. He was calling on the servants, "Quick, bring a clean set of clothes and dress him. Put the family ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Then get a grain-fed heifer and roast it. We're going to feast. We're going to have a wonderful time. My son is here, given up for dead, now alive. Given up for lost, now found." They began to have a wonderful time. All this time, the older son was out in the field. When the day's work was done, he came in. As he approached the house, he heard the music and dancing. Calling over one of the houseboys, he asked what was going on. He told him, "Your brother came home. Your father has ordered a feast, barbecued beef, because he has him home, safe and sound." The older brother stalked off in an angry sulk and refused to join in. His father came out and tried to talk to him, but he wouldn't listen. The son said, "Look, how many times I've stayed here serving you. You've never given me one moment of grief. Never giving you one moment of grief. But have you ever thrown a party for me and my friends? Then this son of yours, who has thrown away your money on whores, shows up and you go all out with a feast." His father said, "Son, you don't understand. You're with me all the time, and everything that is mine is yours. But this is a wonderful time, and we had to celebrate. This brother of yours was dead, and he's alive. He was lost, and now he's found." In short, Jesus knew how to reach all kinds of people. Our time is up. A thank you to Rick Baskett, who has served as our program engineer. And thank you to all of you for listening. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.